Hello, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and on the line with me today is Mark Springsteen. Mark is a recent graduate of Virginia Tech, actually just received his PhD in Curriculum and Instruction in the Technology Education Program. We're going to learn more about that. He is currently serving as a professor in the Graphic Design Program at Virginia Tech, and he is a former award-winning classroom teacher of technology education. And he taught in the classrooms in Virginia. And what we're going to be talking about today is Mark's dissertation and the research that he did. And the topic of that was teamwork and technological problem solving. He conducted this experiment with 294 first-year college engineering students. And I first met Mark in the fall of 1997, when I was a guest presenter in a classroom in a class that Mark was attending or participating in at Virginia Tech. Mark, I'd like to welcome you to the call.
Well, thanks, Tom.
So give our listeners some background about how you ended up with a dissertation topic of teamwork and technological problem solving. And by the way, I should say this for our listeners, is that Mark is on here because his research points to some very interesting findings, and probably more importantly, gets me asking some questions about the value of team building exercises, especially for people in a classroom environment. So Mark, start us off here. It's fall 1997. Can you describe that classroom, what it was that you were doing at Virginia Tech?
Yes. I did my undergraduate at Virginia Tech, and then I was here back doing my master's degree in technology education. And technology education prepares people to go out into the classroom and teach technology to students. Formerly we were the field of industrial arts. And I was taking a class called manufacturing education, and it's a team-based learning class where each team has to come up with, and I had five people on my team, and they're small teams. It could be up to 8 or 10 members on a team, but there were five members on this team, and the professor for that was Dr. Laporte. He had been there for 20 years, and he had invited Tom to come in and do some teamwork exercises with us, the whole goal of the class is to make 20 products in 2 hours from start to finish. So you pretty much spend the whole semester planning for this two-hour session where you got to make these products from start to finish. So you're doing everything really precise and making the jigs and fixtures so that everything lines up. And so it's a whole teamwork experience. And Tom came in. I was actually a master's student, and this is an upper-level class for undergrads, and I was taking it with, and I had four other undergraduates on my team, and this was early in the semester. It was about 4 weeks into the semester, I would say, and I noticed there was like this separation, like, well, here's the grad student, and you know, that's kind of how they were treating me. And I noticed as we were doing the teamwork exercises with Tom that I saw this breakdown of those kinds of things for myself internally. I don't know if the other, I can't say what the other participants were experiencing, but we were just all working together and kind of forgot about those superficial things like graduate student, undergraduate student, or whatever. So I thought it was a neat experience, and I instantly said, with my personality, when I get out and I'm teaching technology education in a high school or middle school, this is what I want to do. I want to do this. And so I ended up, like, my first year, everybody's first year of teaching is tough.
Yeah.
And so I spent that first year, and I didn't do any teamwork exercises. I was just kind of like, to get through, I did a good job, and the students had a team experience, and they were successful making these different clocks they sold in the school, and they were amazed. They got money for them and had a social at the end of the year. But then I was sitting there during the summer, and I was saying to myself, I really want to make a change in the atmosphere within my classroom. So I said, I'm going to start doing those teamwork exercises. So I started kind of inventing some with the resources that I had there in my school. And lo and behold, the students loved it. And so I tried to, once a month, I called them challenge exercises, have these teamwork exercises that the students would do. And they sometimes like those more than the technology education activities I had planned for them.
So
they really enjoyed it, and I noticed that it broke down these superficial things. And also, every year I had successful team projects where, I mean, I took students and they got them to the point where they believed they could make, you know, 40 chess tables in a semester, and then sell those and each have one left over. You know, that'd be like a class of two. So they'd each get a chess table to take home, and then we sold those like for $100, and they were amazed that somebody would pay $100 for some work that they did. It was we're not preparing that, you know, manufacturing people that much anymore, but it was the whole teamwork experience that was neat.
Right.
And the whole thing of learning about technology, how things are made with precision and the organization, and so it was a great experience. And then I came.
Let me ask a quick question. So just for clarity, the activity, you were only doing this once a month in the classroom of your students, or just the manufacturing?
Well, I would try to do more when we got to like the first semester was just basic skills on some more individual projects.
Uh-huh.
And then second semester, I would try to do like even more sometimes.
Okay.
And I would like talk about, you know, like, it's, you know, I would talk about a little bit about like how the Japanese, you know, it's about, you know, that they would share ideas among departments, and it wasn't just competition, and they'd all come up with a better product, and everybody in the end got more out of it. You know? So I don't know what I would have done if they weren't successful, because I always told them we can't have the social at the end of the year, which, because we couldn't call it in our school a party, but they got to have like cake, and, you know, we order Domino's pizza and they bring it in, and they,
right.
And it was kind of neat because they made either, you know, like a chess table or something, so they could, and they made checkers for that, so they could play on top of it. Most of them didn't know how to play chess, but they could play checkers
right
on top. So it was kind of neat they got to use their own product for the.
And these were high school students.
And these were high school students doing this. This was an incredible thing.
And you were doing these team building games with the high school students, and. So just for clarity, you decided to do the team building games because you noticed that the students could be interacting better, and if they interacted better and worked closer as a team, that you could get more done in the classroom.
Yeah, well, it gets people that normally wouldn't. I found that people normally wouldn't be working together productively. They kind of forget. They get so involved in the task of this challenge. And they need each other to solve the problem. You know from your exercise, many times you got to depend on the other person to be able to do it, that they let down these superficial boundaries. And,
yes.
And, I mean, I think those can exist in young people and even sometimes in older people. And sometimes we're not even consciously aware that we're building those boundaries.
That right.
are superficial and not necessary sometimes to work together productively. So.
And what was the response of this? You said the students enjoyed these. And yet the whole idea behind it is that they're challenged at the same time. I think that this is an interesting thing, is that students and people, I think, enjoy the challenge, which seems like an oxymoron. You know, it's on purpose supposed to be difficult, but they enjoy the process that they're going through.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. Some of the students, you know, sometimes didn't have a lot of capability, and one time, and I kind of like just counted off the groups, you know, like 1, 2, 3, and all the threes get together, and all the twos get together, you know, so it was kind of luck of the draw. And some of the students that you would think that weren't like the more productive, they got out there and like they were doing the boardwalk, and they had 8 people on these boards. You know, I didn't have the nice high tech ones that you have. These were the real boards, and they. And I just remember there was kind of a slight incline, and this one guy that, you know, he didn't have a lot of capability in academically, but I just remember him saying left, right, and they were just practically running up the hill, and then you see these guys down there that probably are going to be kind of like go out and be like your engineers and that kind of stuff in the classroom,
right?
And they couldn't move a bit.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
You kind of remember those experiences, but yeah. So then I got to Virginia Tech, and one of the professors asked me to do that with what's called the Technology Student Association. They were we had our undergrads organizing for the high school students to come in and do what's called the Technology Student Association Fall Rally, and the Fall Rally is just kind of like. Some leadership kind of thing. She said, well, you do some teamwork exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my first semester back here as a PhD student, and I was doing that. And I was going, well, you know, you know, I'm convinced I like this for the, you know, the things I mentioned previously, like to break down these superficial boundaries. But I was wondering if it would like change their technological problem solving, which we're kind of interested in our field, like the technological solutions that students come up with in a
right.
team context. And that's kind of how I came up with my topic for my dissertation, teamwork and technological problem solving, in that first semester. So I had that idea. I was like, that's what I really want to do. But I didn't, lo and behold, I didn't know what was going to all involve in the end at that point, you know, as a first semester PhD student. So I didn't realize, you know, what I was getting into.
Mm. So here you are as a PhD student, and at, you have to choose, I guess, help the rest of us understand the life of a PhD student,
sure.
where you, at some point, your committee says you've got to choose your research topic.
Yeah, you usually try to choose your topic by the end of the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And my advisor, it's Dr. Mark Sanders here at Virginia Tech. He's been here for 20 years. I went to him and said, you know, what I'd like to do is, my topic is teamwork and technological problem solving, and do something with students in a group context solving technological problems. And he said, well, you know, I really think that's a great idea. And I mentioned the other committee members, and he said, well, those are really great people for what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of sit down with him and or with your advisor, and that is your committee chair also.
Mm-hmm.
And then that you select a committee based on that's going to help you, guide you through this process. You're going to want to have somebody, in my case, somebody that has an educational psychology background. You typically have somebody that has a research or statistical background
mm-hmm.
on your committee, somebody in your area. So Dr. Sanders was in my area. He's been in technology education for years.
Mm-hmm.
Your committee kind of guides you through the process. I mean, it's your work, but they're there whenever you need them. And if you're kind of getting off track, they'll kind of like give you feedback and to keep you on, because they've done research before, and they're really brilliant people, and they have a variety of experience. So that's what kind of like kind of nurtures the doctoral student through the whole process.
So the topic of this, again, of your research is teamwork and technological problem solving. What do you develop a premise before you started doing this research and putting, maybe you could start to describe now the design of your research, to give our listeners kind of a scope of what you had to go through and what you were thinking, and then what actually happened on the day. It was really a one-day thing, where you gathered all of your data.
Yeah.
So give us the lead up to that.
Yeah.
What was the idea behind your research?
Well, with the research in education, we do kind of like our dissertation ends up being five chapters, and the first chapter is kind of like stating the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw early on that there wasn't anybody that had used teamwork exercises as a kind of a treatment to see if that would influence technological problem solving. So just at first glance, I wasn't finding anything where anybody had my dependent measure, what I was trying to affect was technological problem solving, come up with a technological solution and how that functions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to affect that as my dependent measure, and I saw that nobody had used teamwork exercises with students to try to affect technological problem solving.
Say affect, you mean improve it? Improve the student's ability, a group's ability?
Does it influence that?
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that possibly that influences that based on the data that comes from the study?
You get a group of people together, and if you give them the treatment being some team training, would that training influence the outcome of their ability to work together to solve a technological problem?
That's kind of the gist of it.
Okay.
That's kind of what you're trying to do. And so for me, Virginia Tech usually lets in 1,300 first-year college engineering students every year.
Wow.
So that was a big pool to come from. But What you don't do in a research study is you don't try to take all 1,300, or you don't try to take all first year college engineering students from all over the country, because it would be an impossibility.
Right.
So you try to get a certain amount of students that you'll need to be able to statistically say possibly there's a difference between these groups. One of the most important concepts in this study, and it's not that they're not too hard to understand, so I'll go ahead and mention that, because some people don't have a research background, so I'm trying not to.
And I'm one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a thing called random sampling.
Okay.
Okay, and that's when, like, you know, when you see these polls that they've done, like, on candidates for president or whatever.
Yes.
They want to have a random sample, so, like, each person has an equal chance of being sampled for this. Okay. But that wasn't an issue in my study. What was really important, because, like, whoever came to me was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to get, I wanted a minimum of 288 students.
Okay.
And I ended up having 294, which was a little bit, and that's fine. But the most important concept in my study was that they were randomly assigned to, some got the teamwork exercises and others didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that they're randomly assigned to their group, meaning they had equal chance of being either getting the treatment or not getting the treatment.
And the treatment being the team building training.
So the assumption behind that, the huge assumption is that you're starting off with equivalent groups.
Mm.
Right? If we let the students just say, okay, I'm going to get with him, you might have something that's not random going on there to create equivalent groups.
Okay.
You might have, say, I don't know, people that know each other that had competed somewhere else, and they would quickly pair together.
Mm, okay.
They had experience. So the random assignment was extremely important in my group, in my research studies. There was actually more variables than just the teamwork exercises and not the teamwork exercises. There was actually three independent variables, and the independent variables was going to affect the dependent measure. So I actually had some... one other independent variable, which was problem structure. And some of the students, when they were doing getting the instructions for the technological problem they were going to have,
mm-hmm.
they got some structure set around that, and the other students did not. And so maybe it'd be good to kind of like talk about the treatment and the control group, to kind of like, and just,
well, yeah, let's do that.
Maybe just stick to the teamwork exercises, because that's kind of what we're interested in.
Yeah.
The program, so.
Well, and it was a year ago. I mean, for our listeners, it was October 2005. And if people listening haven't figured out, Mark and I...
2004, Tom.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
2004. It was October 2004, a year ago.
Coming up on the one-year anniversary here.
Right. And Mark and I, you and I had worked... almost a year. Well, not quite a year, but we had talked on the phone, and you had come to one of my workshops, and you
had
asked
that for that one day where we totally planned what we're going to do.
Yes,
we were going to do with this.
And so you had asked me to design a training that could be delivered to a portion of your half of the group. Half of these freshman engineers.
Yeah, half of the team.
Here I am on an October Saturday morning with, how many students did I have in there? Like 140-something?
Yeah, you had 48 teams, and there was three team sizes. That was another factor. You can think of it as an independent variable. There were
mm-hmm.
team sizes of 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
And so you had 48 teams.
So I had 48 teams... For our listeners to picture this, it was myself standing in front of all of these students, about 140 some students,
right.
And they were
144
students, and in another building altogether were the control group. Is that what we call them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and the group I'm working with is the treatment group.
Right.
And so you and I ahead of time decided what activities I was going to lead with the students, and we were doing team building games with these freshman engineering students who were then going to do something else after lunch, which I wasn't allowed to know.
And the participants couldn't know that. That was extremely important.
Yes. So
and also, it's called a double blind study. So. Tom obviously knew he was the treatment, and also the leader from the control group also knew he was kind of that with the control group. But none of the research assistants that were helping Tom pass out things knew whether this what the people were in the other building would have been doing.
And I didn't divulge to the other students. They were essentially led to believe that everybody was going to be doing the same thing. Is that correct?
Right. Well, they weren't. They just didn't know what the other group was doing.
Okay. They might have assumed, made some assumptions, but we didn't discuss that.
They may have assumed that they were if they knew any, and most 18-year-olds probably aren't going to know about research studies in that sense.
Right.
The people with you may have assumed, well, we're just playing games here, so we're the control group. So
right.
I mean, that's the kind of neat thing about it. So the treatment group, because I kind of said, you know, because somebody could say, well, the reason that if these teams went on in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
when we're going to do the dependent measure where they were doing the problem solving, and they did better, somebody might say, well, that's because you did problem solving in the morning. Tom,
mm-hmm.
what he was doing was problem solving. So I actually had the other groups, the other teams, had to also be with their team members in the control group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those 48 teams had to be with their team members, and we actually gave them some pencil and paper based puzzles. So it was definitely cognitive based kind of things, because people could say, "Well, the stuff Tom was doing is cognitive, you know, whatever he was doing."
Right.
So that kind of like, so the control group can involve something, so that you still have kind of. So I was trying to like say the difference is the cooperation and the having the students work together actively and involving the psychomotor component versus they're working together, but you know it's just however they want to work together, and it's not active. It's not where they have. I mean, because each over there in with the control group, each individual within a team had their own set of puzzles, so they might have worked on them together, they might have not, and it wasn't active where you have to like, and you can talk about some of the exercises you did with the
mm-hmm.
with the team that you had.
Well, and yeah, so going back to give you our listeners a visual representation, I'm in a big room with 144 students, and you, Mark, had already, prior to these students showing up, had divided them into teams of two or teams of three or teams of four.
And
so at one point in the morning with my working with them, I had them get into their teams of two, threes, and fours. And I did a series of team-building exercises where they were up and active, and sort of the whole premise behind TeachMeTeamwork.com, which is teaching how to teach team building skills in a fast way, in a memorable way, a way that sticks. And so I did some of these team building activities, and what I might do is put up a sample. Like one of the activities the students did was this activity I call hole tarp. And there's a tarp with some five holes, and there's a ball that the group has to maneuver through these, and they're working together, and they first identify what the obstacles are metaphorically, what these holes are to working as a team. And so rather than delivering a lecture, this what I did was not lecture based, but very much an active up, working with things, solving problems together, that type of thing. Whereas the other group was doing more cerebral sit-down type of, like you said, pencil and paper activity, and I didn't know what they were doing. So, and then after I led this training, I wasn't actually privy either to what was going to happen after lunch. So after I did my training, we fed everybody in the room that I was in. It was pizza. If memory serves me, and one of the funny things about this, Mark, was what it's like to get freshmen engineers, like maybe freshmen of any major, up early on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Because the first thing the average freshman wants to do on a Saturday morning is not get up early and go participate in a study.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So that we, it was impressive to get the number that you did, and also to give the scope of what you did. How many assistants did you have, graduate assistants?
Yeah, there was, for the total day, there was over 30 research assistants that I had to have helping me with this. And
In
the morning, we had to have 12 to 15 research assistants to pass out whatever, like the worksheets for the control group exercises.
Right.
And I assume Tom was a little bit more competent, so he could run this with maybe 6 research assistants that
right.
were there passing things out. Plus, we didn't want to waste time. We wanted to have the activities move along quickly because they got the most for the time that they were together. And then the afternoon, the students went to different rooms with their teams to solve the problems that we proposed to them.
Right.
And so there had to be somebody to take their scores and take them over time, that kind of thing.
The logistics that you went through to lead up to this were, it was intense. I remember that, just the amount of prep work that you had to do in order, because so now let's talk about what happened. So here we have the treatment group, the group I worked with. They don't really interact with the control group, and after lunch people move off into all these different rooms around campus in these different buildings, and
right.
then you give them a technological problem. So help our listeners understand what you mean by. Well, can you share exactly what you did?
Sure,
okay.
Sure. And they can actually look at a little bit of kind of what we did with the students because it's online.
Okay.
What we gave them for the problem was, we gave them, they had this huge drawing grid, and the thing was to design a bridge. It's an engineering design, so that's a technological problem.
Mm-hmm.
They were to design a bridge on a computer simulation, and the software we used is called the West Point Bridge Designer. And if you go on Google and search West Point Bridge Designer, you'll come up and you can actually download the software and play around with it. We were using an older version of it because the older version, is the 2002 version, which would have been West Point Bridge Designer 4.1. We were using that version because you can build a truss model based on that out of paper. And this very special kind of paper we used, it was cardstock paper,
mm-hmm.
and it really simulates the compression and tension that goes on in a real bridge,
mm-hmm.
where if you use a balsa wood bridge, it doesn't do any of that. So it was an extremely complex problem for their age to understand the tension and compression and try to predict which members are in tension and compression and that kind of thing. So they actually had two technological problems. They had to design a bridge that would support this on the computer, and it has an animation, and it's a 20 kiloton truck driving across the bridge, which is a dynamic load because it's moving across there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to, based on that, they were supposed to, from what they learned there, try to build a truss model that we were going to test for efficiency based on that.
So actually built something that they could hold and touch based on their design.
Well, yeah, but they can't totally take everything from what they did there. They had to learn the concepts because with the truss model, which was made out of the cardstock paper, and the tubes were already made, the strips were cut by a professional printer, really precise, so they could pick different size bars, they could pick different size tubes. But you'd have to go. I mean, if you're interested in that, go to the West Point Bridge Designer and look at their file folder bridges, because it was based on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very innovative project, and it's kind of the future. Balsa wood bridges actually build some misconceptions, but we won't get into that for students because it doesn't act like a real bridge, a real truss bridge would that was in tension and compression. And so they had if they totally took that over there, because they had a dynamic load, a 20 kiloton truck moving across that on the computer, they didn't have that. But the truss model was a static load, and the design brief, which gives them kind of like a background of the problem, told them which joint that the load was going to be applied to.
Mm-hmm.
So if they designed a member wrong, for example, if a member was in compression, and they made that out of a bar, which would have just been a strip of paper that has very little compression value,
mm-hmm.
kind of like a string.
Right.
If you push that together, it doesn't it's just going to go together, right?
Right.
There's no compressive value to it. But if you pull it apart, if you're pulling the string apart, mm-hmm. it actually has some tensile strength.
Right.
So you got to figure out which members in that bridge are really getting pushed together and which ones are getting pulled apart.
And you made it difficult like this because why? Why did you give them such a challenging... because this took hours for them to do.
Yeah, it actually did take them about 4 hours in the afternoon because we had the design brief, 30 minutes to read over that, and then, you know, they had like a couple hours working with the bridge and then mm-hmm. a couple hours to finish up their truss model. Yeah, so it was a significant problem, and we just wanted to, you know, if you just gave them something simple, mm-hmm. I mean, and it wasn't something they could actually do in the classroom. Now, this project would actually take, you know, a lot of time to do in the classroom. I mean, it might take for their level, it might be like a 3-week project that they would do in their first year engineering course. And so I was giving it to them all in an afternoon. And normally they would build a whole bridge, but I was like, you know, I'm kind of getting their design ideas just from the truss model, and I have something I can test. And but it was a significant problem. And if they, you know, if they didn't organize all these parts from this for the truss model, you know, then their team may not have done well. They had to organize. They had to negotiate. Well, you know, you're going to work on this, or you know, what do you think this is? You know, is this intention or compression? Or did they even have a discussion based on that?
Mm-hmm.
They just do whatever, you know. So it was an interesting problem for them, and I actually asked the participants to say how many people had like made something like this before, and almost none had made a truss model that was made with tubes and bars out of paper like that.
So it was really difficult. In other words, it's important for people listening to this to understand this was not just a go in and build any kind of thing, because what they were trying to build the strongest bridge they could. Is that correct?
And yeah, the most. They wanted to for the computer simulation. It's actually based on a dollar amount.
Okay.
So like the lower dollar amount bridge, you probably have a more efficient bridge, and you pick the right kind of members. And there's a whole manufacturing thing in there too. Like if they pick too many different types of members,
mm-hmm.
but like if you're on site, it would cost more money to build a bridge if you use a variety of members, custom members.
Mm-hmm.
They have to each be specially made, and the joint has to go together in a certain way. And so they had to like kind of like learn those things. We didn't say, okay, well, don't think about like not using a lot of different types of members because that's going to drive your cost up. They had to learn these concepts. It was a discovery lesson.
And so I would imagine I wasn't there to see this. I wasn't allowed to actually go into the rooms, which was fine. And I'm kind of imagining that there's going to be a lot of discussion and back and forth as to how this, and again, there's groups of two, there's teams of three, and there's teams of four, and so we need to imagine two people trying to come up with a solution versus three people versus four people, all working together under some tight time frames, and it's a slightly competitive environment, and there's a lot to get done in a short period of time.
Yeah, it was competitive, and I actually intentionally kind of made it more competitive for a reason there. We actually, the design team, and I felt like the top six design teams were told that they would get plaques for the place. Like, so they were told that we were going to take their computer bridge and their truss model score, and we were going to like standardize those in a way that we could add those together. And if they had one of the top six design scores, they would get a plaque that said, you know, it said Virginia Tech Engineering Challenge. First place on it,
mm-hmm.
and so for me, if I was 18 years old, I mean, I mean, plaques at that age are extremely, I think, important for
mm-hmm.
their development, and so I would want that plaque, you know,
right.
to go on my college dorm wall,
right.
But anyway, in at that age, and then also the top two design teams were told they would win pocket PCs.
Okay,
and I did that for two reasons. I needed a certain number of participants to come to the study. And so Tom mentioned earlier that they offered the pizza, but also was like, that might not be totally enough to get them up that early on. So lots of these students have money to order pizza.
Right.
But a pocket PC might be something used in their classroom. But also once they get there, you want them to be actually competing.
Right.
Because they may just stand there and say, well, you know, I'm getting my 2-point course credit for this that my instructor said if I go to this, I'll get, and actually want to win something. So that was kind of the idea behind that. And I think from all the comments we got, they enjoyed the activities anyway.
Right.
You know, even the control group that got the puzzles, and we actually showed a short jet video.
Yeah.
On the history of the jet and the development of that jet engine, and some of them said they want to be aerospace engineers from that. So they seem to enjoy that for the most part. You know, out of 294, I didn't see a lot of. There was a few. You're always going to have a few negative comments.
Sure. Well, maybe you can. So now you've generated essentially an enormous amount of data. You've got to test all these bridges, and the idea behind the bridge testing is to see if. The treatment group, the group that I had worked with around team building, had did that have any effect? So maybe you can go into what did you discover? What happened?
Yeah, sure. Well, what I found is the teamwork exercises, and I had some other treatments. They have to read my dissertation, which will eventually be published and they are accessible online, and they can see that. It's I've already finished it, but not totally available. Actually, you could go to one place and get it right now, but Tom will talk about that on his blog.
Yes.
What I found the data, and you call that your findings. What were your findings?
Okay.
That we actually took the computer bridge score in 30-minute intervals, and so all the teams improved. But if you looked at their lines over time, they were like parallel and not far apart, so there wasn't any difference over time.
Mm-hmm.
With the computer bridge, and so they all improve.
And when you say all, you're talking about treatment and control
improved almost identically, you know, and they improved, like they got their score. So they were learning the concept, which, you know, that's a finding in itself, that that the computer bridge in itself, the students were able to learn some of the concepts, or they wouldn't have been lowering their costs.
Mm-hmm.
But then with the trust model, what we found, and that was same for teams of 2, 3, and 4 too. They were all kind of like improving the same with the computer bridge design that they were doing. But with the trust model, what I found is there was, if you can picture this, if you compare just people, the teams of 2 that got the teamwork exercises, and the control group for teams of 2 that the control group didn't get the teamwork exercises, there was a difference. And so the teamwork exercises may have had that, but once you do the statistical analysis, it wasn't what we call statistically significant.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be really sure. There was a difference. There was a finding, but it wasn't big enough that we kind of like expect this. It could have just been that there was already a difference. There would have been a difference anyway.
Okay.
And then with 3, there was almost no difference. So their mean scores, that's the average score for teams of 3, there was no difference between the teamwork exercises and the treatment.
Really?
Yeah. But then what we found, there was a large difference for teams of 4. So a very large difference. I mean, and in statistical language, we call it a large effect. So the mean score difference between teams of 4 that got the teamwork sizes and the treatment was very large. And we wouldn't normally expect this, maybe like 1 in 100. If you did this study 100 times, if it was just chance, you'd only expect that big of a result 1 in 100 times.
Wow.
Only 1% of the time would you expect if it was just, they were going to do that way anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because you could do it, you know, again, and if you did that same study 100 times, one time you might find that the control group did that well. So you think, well, it's probably not just due to chance. There actually was something different in those groups, and because we created equivalent groups in the morning,
right?
The only difference that happened to those groups is some got the team exercises and some, and the other were the treatment group. We kind of like say we think that possibly it was because of that.
So what does this mean?
Something else operating there.
What does this prove?
Well, in research studies, it's really important, especially in human subject studies where you're studying human performance or learning or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You usually say that the hypothesis was supported.
Okay.
That there was a difference between these groups based on our findings. We don't think that the groups were equivalent. I mean, the scores were so different that we were able to reject our null hypothesis. There was no difference between the groups. So we think there is. So we kind of conclude that it seems that there was a difference based on the findings. So there was a difference between the groups. And,
so we can't say that you proved something.
No. You say you supported the hypothesis.
Okay.
So you supported your research question, and you know, you'd have to like do another study, and this is a specific population that we were working with.
Mm-hmm.
And in some sense, that's good because some people might say, "Well, you were working with just college engineering students, and they have high SAT scores, and they come from very academic backgrounds, so this doesn't apply." To some people might say, "Well, if you did that with diverse groups, you know, you wouldn't find that."
Okay.
But the opposite could be true. You might even find a bigger difference based on that diversity.
So what are the implications of this? Does it show that or imply that if we teach team skills in this active way that it produces it increases a team's ability to solve technological problems and maybe even go a step further.
When you're saying proof, we just say that with this study, it was supported that with maybe with teams of four, once we get our, that's kind of what I concluded.
Right.
It may be with larger teams, with larger student teams, tasks that involve a lot of organization, because the trust had all these different parts they had to put together.
Right.
They had to check and make sure that they had glued them correctly, and if they didn't do that, they might have a premature failure in their trust.
Right.
That possibly the teamwork exercises would be something. So it supported it. Okay. So if somebody else did this study, and then somebody else did the study, and they kept finding the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and they had the exact same condition,
right,
of the study of my study, then we kind of it would come a little bit more accepted, right?
Right.
Usually you don't prove a hypothesis; you just support it or refute it, and so that's kind of the terminology that you use.
Okay. So the people listening to this recording, maybe this is yet another potentially an indicator that what we do, the way that I, at least I'm promoting the teaching of team skills, and in other words, to be up and active and engaged, and in these physical exercises, experiential, adventure-based
right.
learning, is an effective way to teach team skills in a short period of time. Is that going too far in your estimation?
Well, I think that you could say something like that. With this one study, this is what was found.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Somebody else might do another study, or look at it in a little bit different way and find something else. Usually you have to replicate a study several times and under different conditions. So and remember, that's what I was saying. We're working with a specific population. If we did it with a different population, we might have a smaller or we might have no effect, a larger effect, or a smaller, effect.
Right, right.
Than we did. So we really don't know. But it is some support that the teamwork exercises with, depending on the task. That's kind of what I concluded. Depending on the task, because with the computer bridge, I kind of. In my conclusions talked about, well, it just takes one person to work with the mouse, and maybe they weren't with the computer mouse and the design, and maybe there wasn't that much negotiation going on, or it could have been that the software, they would have learned that anyway, and it wasn't enough challenge for them, and the trust model was a challenge. That's where kind of like they really, really tested their knowledge.
Right.
You know, because they could test their design as many times as they wanted on the computer bridge, but they really had to like decide ahead of time, I think this is this way, or it's going to be this way when our trust model gets tested later on. So they really tested whether we really know what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, we're hoping that they kind of like learned that some of the ideas from the computer bridge software.
Well, and I might have related this story to you. I have a member to teach me teamwork who I've had a conversation with who's works for an engineering a company that manufactures large electronic products like for generators and whatnot, and power generation, and they hire lots of engineers, right? And one of her complaints, and she's in human resources, and one of her complaints is that these engineers that they hire straight out of colleges, including Virginia Tech, she said. And by the way, I'm a graduate of Virginia Tech in technology education, and one of her complaints with the engineers across the board, no matter where they hire from, is that they are smart, and they don't know how to work together in a team environment. And I said, have you ever shared this information with the colleges that you hire from? And she said, I'd share it with them all the time, and here's their solution. Almost to the school is it, typically in their senior year, these engineering students are required to do a team project where they might be on a team of three, and they say, okay, you know, your grade is going to be determined as a team, and they just essentially put them on the team. There's no training. It's sort of like throwing somebody into a pool and saying, okay, swim. And they've never swum before.
Yeah.
And so her job is to help these just graduated engineers learn how to effectively work in a team. Isn't that crazy? It seems like what your research indicates is that with a little bit of investment in teaching people how to work well together, that it can produce a much bigger outcome or better results, rather.
Yeah, and there may be other benefits. You know, we were this study was kind of like looking at I think it was looking at learning performance, because they had to learn these skills. It wasn't assumed that they had the knowledge ahead of time. So they were supposed to learn through each other and discussion and that kind of thing, and the information that was presented in the design brief. So I was looking at kind of learning for the student. It probably makes more sense. I mean, the first year engineering program here now is including more team experiences, and they didn't do this 10 years ago.
Right.
It's been more of like a 2000 kind of thing where they do this thing in the engineering program here. They have MacGyver teams, and they have them go out. So they are actually doing more of that earlier on, which I think is a positive thing. But how did they like talk to the students about structuring their experience? How, you know, and I kind of think like a lot of it's left up to kind of like just whatever happens, instead of like giving a little bit of background, you know, and talking about, you know, giving some experience. Now, for me, that's an important thing.
Yeah.
And I think that 18-year-olds are still open to these kind of, if it's presented in the right way, these types of challenges that we were talking about, where you have them solve some things that aren't the actual content yet, the engineering design problems, but have them working together as, you know, in a cooperative kind of way, that they would be open to that. I mean, and you know from your experience, sometimes you take a group and they're in their 40s or 50s, and they're really open to it because they've lived a life where they've just been kind of sitting in an office cubicle or whatever, and so they're really open to it too at that age.
Right.
So.
Oh yes. Well, this is fascinating, Mark, talking with you about this. Even though I've, you know, was involved in depth with one aspect of the research, I've still learned some things in our conversation today about what's been involved for you. So As we wrap up here, how is it? Actually, tell us what you're doing now. You just recently graduated with your PhD. You're now Dr. Mark Springsteen. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And so what are you doing now?
Well, I've found a position here at Virginia Tech, and this is more of a temporary position. I finished in August, mm-hmm. so it was a little bit late to do the to apply for tenured positions, but I'm applying for positions right now, and hopefully we'll by August 2006 we'll be working in a tech ed program or industrial technology program. And
great.
And one other thing I'd like to mention that I've discovered, because when I came back as a PhD student, I also had to work with undergraduates. I was actually teaching classes like the class I took in 1997, the manufacturing class.
Oh, yes, right.
Now, I was teaching that, and I did the teamwork exercises with these students, and in their student teaching, lots of them went out into the schools and were doing these. The technology education classroom has usually more space and has students working in groups, and so I think it's the ideal, one of the ideal settings to kind of like do teamwork kinds of things.
I agree.
And we're not under the... we're not so much under the gun with all this standardized testing, and so we have a little bit more freedom in our curriculum.
Right.
But I think that students need to get these team experiences somewhere in their education. It doesn't matter if they're college bound or not, of working together and kind of like raising to a higher level. And so the thing I discovered was that my students here that just graduated and are out in their first year of teaching, hopefully they'll incorporate some of those. I know some of them will.
Yes.
Because they already did it in their student teaching.
Well, the teachers that I know that incorporate this, whether they're technology education teachers or an English teacher or a theater teacher, I know theater teachers who teach team skills.
Sure.
Because of the same finding that you had is that, one, the students are engaged by them. That's one level. They're entertained, they're engaged, they're challenged, and it improves the learning environment in general, regardless of the subject, and the students bond with each other, and the atmosphere, the learning atmosphere, is improved. And
by the way, I think that's probably a more important research question than I tried to answer. the hard thing with research is, how do you come up with the right kind of question and make it testable?
Yes.
And so that the valid, the findings are valid and reliable, and so you have a whole other issue there. I mean, if somebody wanted to do their study on that, Are the students' perceptions of these? And sometimes if you ask students directly, then you're going to get a very different answer than if you've got some way that you can objectively measure that.
Yes, which is what you did, which is so impressive.
It was objective, yeah. And lots of people are doing things like now where they videotape and they analyze the tape. So like maybe the first 9 weeks of the school year, these theater students, there's no teamwork exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second 9 weeks, they do a whole session of teamwork exercises. And then in the third 9 weeks, possibly they take some video and they kind of like look at, well, did it change the interaction? Did it seem to change the interaction?
Mm-hmm.
Every design's got its weakness, though. I mean, so you can't really say, well, if they just spent a whole semester together, would they have been like that in a third 9 weeks? So research is a difficult thing. Coming up with a way that you can make a research question and then make it testable is not an easy thing. You have to do a lot of background and really think through how it's going to work out.
Well, and the abstract of your study, we're going to make that available as either a PDF or a link blog here. But that's just a short description of what you did and how you did it. And the longer, the dissertation, I guess, is how many pages is that?
The actual dissertation with the appendices is, I'm looking at it online.
Yeah.
It's 372 pages.
And that's going to be available probably within the next year online. And when that happens, I'll put a link up and let everybody know. So
yeah.
And if you'd like to contact Mark directly, his contact information will be at the blog there. So if you are a research student or would like to take on you know, take this to the next step, or try to duplicate what Mark has done. Perhaps there's some collaboration there. Well, Mark, I so appreciate your time and the. I know how hard you worked, and you worked hard to do this. And I saw an inkling of that a year ago when I hopped in there and saw all that was required to pull this research day off. So you are to be commended. And
it was nice having somebody that has. Probably if I wouldn't have got some feedback on Tom how to organize a lunch efficiently. he knows how to work with large groups, how to have like one member from this group of 18 come up and get the pizza for everybody.
Little trick
can end up taking a couple of hours to get
right.
To it right. So we had lunch was only a 20 to 25 minute experience for these two. and that's enough time for them. They're used to eating.
Well, there's a lot of other nuances that we didn't cover in this. We've been talking for about 55 minutes, and there's a lot of other things that we didn't share that have happened that are huge learnings for me and for you as well. Perhaps there'll be another time for that. And so, I want to thank you and for your time, Mark.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Tom.
Well, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com signing off and hoping that you'll take a look at the abstract of the research that Dr. Mark Springsteen has done, and maybe you're out there in the listening world there thinking, gosh, I'm the person ready to do the next study that is related to this. So thanks again for listening. Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com signing off.